Hello and welcome to the Design and Marketing Podcast with Rob Cubbon. I hope you're very well today. Thank you very much for listening. I've got a great episode here for you today. You know, when I first decided to start this podcast, I thought I'd look for web designers, graphic designers, illustrators, and anyone from the creative industries who's running an online business and talk to them about marketing and how they work, what they do, and all sorts of stuff like that. And of course, I had a few ideas of some of the people I wanted to talk to. So I wanted to talk to David Airy, Elliot J. Stocks, Chris Spooner, Chris Collier from CSS Tricks, people like that. But I thought I'd get a few interviewees underneath my belt before I tackled the big boys. However, being into podcasts as I am, I've been listening to a lot of the podcasts from Blogcast FM recently, and they are interviews conducted by Srini Rao. And if you go to blogcastfm.com, you'll find out all about it there, or I advise you to subscribe via iTunes. I've been listening to these podcasts quite a lot recently, and one of the people on them was Paul Jarvis. Now, Paul came to the attention of Blogcast FM because he'd been designing most of the websites of the other people on the show. So I listened to his podcast with a great deal of interest, and it was absolutely excellent. It was fascinating to hear him speak. So I contacted Paul to see if he was interested in talking to me, which, fantastically, he was. Now, some of you may never heard of Paul. He may be a little bit under the radar. He doesn't read too many web design blogs, kind of avoids being too influenced by what's going on at the moment, which would account for his portfolio of work looking so different and interesting. So I'd very much recommend that you have a look at his website. His name's Paul Jarvis, and his website is pjrvs.com, so it's P. Jarvis without any of the vowels. Don't do it now. Of course, I'd love you to listen to the interview. But if you go to his website and /work, you'll see some of the websites he's designed, and he's designed for people like Danielle Laporte and Alexandra Franson, to name but a few. In fact, there are quite a lot of websites that he's designed that aren't there on his portfolio page. But if you have a look at those, they really will teach you a bit of a lesson in how to design websites. Fantastic ideas in typography and layout and colour. Now, Paul's been working as a web designer on his own, at home, running his own business for over 15 years. And during that time, he's never spent any money on marketing. He's never gone out there and offered his services to anyone. This is because he's just had work as a result of recommendations all the time. Now, well, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, oh, well, this guy, he's really talented. He's really great. He's been there for so long. Well, that's the sort of thing that I would think. And I think that would be a big mistake, because I think Paul has worked hard at it. I think we all work hard. I think what Paul has done that is maybe different to the rest of us is he's been very, very strict with the work that he's done. He's only done work that he's really proud of. He'll only do things if he wants to put them in his portfolio, whereas probably one in nine things I'll put in my portfolio. So that might give you some ideas to the sort of care he's taken over his career and his work. But there was a lot more to Paul than just web design. We talked about yoga, diet, exercise, music, all sorts of other things. And I really would love for you to listen to the interview. It was a great interview to do, and I really think it came across well. I think his ideas came across well. So here's someone who I really should have wished to interview before I started this podcast series. But anyway, I'm interviewing him now. Here's Paul Jarvis. Paul, it's just great to speak to you. I can't believe I'm speaking to you, because usually when I'm sorting out an interview with people, it gets cancelled and postponed about six or seven times before we actually meet up. But with you, it's like, can you do it this time? Yes. And here we are. So thank you very much, Paul.
Yeah, no worries.
These interviews are for primarily web designers who follow my blog, or the people who listen to the podcasts. And yeah. But you never know, because I get a lot of emails from people who aren't necessarily web designers, are just interested in online businesses, which is great, because I really want to talk to you about everything, because not just web design. I've looked into a lot of your stuff only over the last 2 weeks, I've got to say, I just can't wait to talk to you about everything. So,
awesome.
Paul, tell me how you got into web design in the first place.
Basically, I was in university for computer science and artificial intelligence. This was back in the early 90s. And then I was also doing like layout design and that sort of thing. And then the internet started to happen and become graphical. And I decided to, I'm a coder, let's make a website. So I started making websites. I made a couple websites, and I made one website that was a dictionary of colloquialisms and slang, and it got fairly popular. But anyways, an agency in Toronto that was thinking, hey, this internet seems interesting. I think we could build some websites for our clients. Let's bring on a web designer and see where it goes. So they brought me on. I ended up working for them for a couple years, and I started out just building websites, and then I became the creative director of the company and that sort of thing. So I kind of started when the internet started. So I was building websites back when there was like just starting internet stuff. So, and since then, I left that company probably about 15 years ago. And since then, I've just been working for myself, building websites for everyone from Fortune 500 companies to people with like online empires and that sort of thing, and kind of everybody in between. I've done a lot of work for startups in San Francisco and that sort of thing, kind of all over the board. I do have a focus, but I have done work totally across the board in almost every market.
Yeah, and I want to talk about the people you work for later, because you do have an awful lot of interesting work. And if anyone's interested, I'll mention it now. But if you go to pjrvs.com, Paul, P. Jarvis without the vowels, is that right?
Yes. I like to make it needlessly difficult.
But it's nice, and it's five letters, though. I like that. I like it very much. Five letters.
Cool.
So if you go there, we'll mention that at the end, obviously, but /work, you'll see some of the examples of the links, in fact, of the websites you've created. But it's interesting that you described yourself as a coder originally, and I've always been interested in the debate about designing versus developing, and this question, although I always believe that, you know, if you want to do it, you should do it. But did you have any sort of creative side to you, or artistic side to you, when you were a child?
Yes, I've always been into drawing and building and creating, and I've played music for 20 years as well. Like, I've always been creative. To me, I get bored really, really easily, and creativity is one thing where I can't, it's hard to get bored of being creative, so I've always kind of gone in that direction. Like, I've always enjoyed creativity because it's something that you can just keep, you can keep doing, and it's not like it's hard to get bored, like I said. So I mean, I think that they're like, I'm both. I do all of the, for the clients that I work with, I do all of the design and all of the programming as well, and I think it's important because I think one informs the other. So when I'm designing a website, I know how WordPress works, or the content management system that I use, which is WordPress pretty much entirely. So I know how that works when I'm designing a website, and I know how code works and what will work and what doesn't work when I'm designing. And then when I'm programming, I know that I'm not going to ruin the designs when I'm theming it, because I'm the one who did them.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to cut corners or take this out or take this out. I'm going to make it look exactly like the mock-up look. So then my clients get, they see the designs that I do, and then they see the site, and it's the same, and it might scale based on responsiveness, or it might, you see the flow and it's different, and or there's animations, that sort of thing. But they get what they know that they got in the layout. So I really think it's important either to do both yourself or to work with a team where the designers might not know how to code, but they know exactly how the coding works, and they know how their programmers build things, and they know how things are built fundamentally. They might not know how to write the code, but they know how that stuff works. Same with developers. If they don't understand even the basics of design, then there's going to be small variations that just make it not work well.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And we had this come up in one of the other interviews, and it one of our, the web designers I was talking to, Matt Shuey, actually, he's from California, and he said it's a great skill that he's learned is to develop a sort of pixel perfect layout in a graphics program, Photoshop or whatever, show it to the clients and be able to code that perfectly in HTML or WordPress. And mm-hmm. that is a skill, because if you don't have both of those, or access to both of those skills, then there can be a little bit of a problem in the middle, which might blossom out to a full-scale headache. So
exactly, and I've seen that happen before, and I've been hired just to program some sites in the past, and I don't do that anymore, because I've been hired because that designer doesn't know anything about the web, and they'll give me layouts. They're beautiful and they look great, but in terms of building the functionality, I have to change things to work with what works on the web or what works in a CMS and what is editable, that the client actually needs to be editable so it can't look this certain way. And then I end up looking like the bad guy because I've ruined some beautiful design. It's not worth it to me. So I don't even do those kinds of projects anymore.
Yeah.
I only do projects where I'm doing both things, because I know that I can take care of both those things.
Yeah. I mean, picking up a project after somebody else who you don't know has been working on it is, I've got one. I mean, I don't have the ability to turn those down, but I've got one at the moment where somebody's come to me. And I've seen it twice as well. It's a WordPress thing that has been developed in the subcontinent. Nothing against what they do there, but it mm-hmm. comes back. I just don't understand why they did it in the way they did, and so I've told the client that I will do what they want, but I will do what they want and nothing more, because if you go in and start fixing it and doing it the way you want to do it, it'll just take you forever. You might as well start again. So there's that. I want to take us back to your first job. I think you were working for, you actually were employed for 2 years or something, not very long period of time at all.
Yeah.
Because what I like to talk about in these interviews is, because a lot of people are interested in it, is how you get work. Unfortunately, I know your answer already, but I want other people to hear the answer. How you got work when you became freelance after you left your steady income and what have you. So, you know, you were obviously a web designer, a developer at this company, and you just set up on your own. So what happened then?
I've told this story a lot because it's interesting. Well, I don't know. I think it's interesting. But anyways, so I was working at a company and it was good, but it wasn't what I wanted to do. I've always kind of wanted to do my own. Well, I have always done my own thing. So I wanted to do that in work. So I decided that agency wasn't for me, and I was just going to go find another agency. I wanted to keep going with what I was doing. I was the lure of the steady income and the working for somebody full time and having that perceived safety net. It was something that I was like, I need to do this for a little while longer. But then when I left that company, I started to get calls the next day from all of the clients saying, Paul, where are you going next? Because we want to follow you there. So they started calling me and wanting to know what company I was going to go work at next, because they wanted to bring their business there. And then I realized, hey, I can just do this myself and get 100% of the profits. So I started my company basically with a decent client. At the time, it was professional athletes. So I started my company with, it was probably about a dozen or so professional athlete websites to build. So, I mean, I was lucky in that respect, but I mean, it's not really luck, because when I was working at that agency, they could tell that I was the one doing all of the work and I was the one that they were really getting the value from. So I was, even as an employee of somebody else, I was still showing all of these clients that I was, and it wasn't through ego or anything like that, but they could see that I was the one producing the work and doing exactly what I say I was going to do and meeting every deadline and all of that. So that became really important to them, and they didn't want to trust that to somebody else. That even though they trusted the agency, they didn't want to trust that to an unknown factor that would come in after me and start doing it. So I started my company with a decent sized client list, basically. And day two, I had full-time work working for myself.
So you didn't do you weren't underhand. You didn't go around to these clients and say, "Hey, I'm leaving the agency. I'm the one who did this. I'm the one who did that." It was totally you just left your job and they contacted you. So it does say another thing that has come out in these interviews, because you do tend to get recurring themes, is that if the product is good, and if the service you're offering is of a sufficient quality, the marketing does seem to take care of itself in a certain way.
Yeah, I agree.
And I've seen that a number of times. And just to reiterate to people, you haven't really ever gone out and tried to look for a client.
No, I've never done any sales or marketing or anything. I don't even have business cards.
Yeah.
I don't. But yeah, I mean, it's 100% word of mouth. Instead of putting any money or time into marketing myself, I put all that time into the client work that I do. And then those clients become my salespeople. I don't have to do sales. I have all of my clients tell everybody that they know to hire me. Yeah. So I don't need to work on that. I can just work on what I love to do, which is good, because I suck at sales anyways. but it's such an easy sell. If somebody comes to me and says, "Oh, this person that I highly respect says that I need to hire you and only you to do my website," all I need to do is tell them how much it's going to cost and if they can afford it and if the timeline works. Yeah. I don't need to pitch. I don't need to do anything.
Yeah.
I've already fostered that relationship with the existing client and built them something that they're head over heels in love with. And then that takes care of itself in terms of sales and marketing. Like, I have clients that have referred, I have some clients that have probably referred more than 3 or 4 dozen other clients my way just because they like the work that I've given them.
Yeah. And that is incredible ROI, isn't it? You couldn't put a price on that. I mean, if you were to go out and buy the marketing necessary to get that, I mean, it's just a no-brainer, isn't it? I mean,
yeah, I couldn't afford that.
I mean, I don't think many people could, because that is a huge amount of business, and it's quality business as well. It's business that is exactly the sort of business you want, because it's the sort of sites that you're good at. Because you'll only be recommended people that you can that you will be a perfect fit for as well. So
exactly. And it really establishes you in like a market or a niche. Like, I really work in one specific market at the moment. And that's because like you're saying, that the clients recommend other people that do kind of similar stuff to they do. Because a lot of times you hang out in those kinds of circles. And so I've kind of established myself, and then it makes it even easier. Like, they can see, like, "Oh, I built this site for the top like 4 people in this market. That obviously I know what I'm doing." Hopefully, then I can. It's a much easier pitch. And then, yeah, like I said, I'd rather just be doing design and development. Like, I could hire a staff, and I don't want to. I just like doing what I do,
kind of thing.
So I don't need to focus on any of the stuff that I don't like to do.
Okay, so for the sake of people listening to this, who are going to think, "Oh God, he's a lucky guy. He's obviously really good at what he does." So what is it? We touched on it earlier, but maybe you could talk a little bit about how you talk to the client before. We're going to get onto your book in a minute. How do you talk to your client before you start making the website and the things you do? Because I've been looking at some of the sites you create, and there's some great. I really love them, and especially the color schemes. And there seems to be a lot of thought gone into the color, and quite original. You wouldn't have thought that you could pick 3 colors and think, "Oh God, I have never seen that on a website before." So, can you talk a little bit about the process with a client who's come to you and wants a website, and maybe explain to the people why it is what you do creates so many good recommendations and enables you not to spend 1 minute or 1 dime on marketing?
Sure. So there's a bunch of points, and I'll try to remember them.
Yeah, there's a lot there. Sorry.
The first thing is, it's kind of interesting because I never I don't do anything in the web design industry, so it's really interesting to talk about web design to web designers because I never do that. I never ever do that. So that's it's interesting. It's kind of neat. So it's different in that regard. So the other thing with talking to clients, the biggest thing is, and I found this, and I get hired quite a few times by people who have worked with another web designer, had a shitty experience, and then hired me, and things just didn't go right in that project for whatever reason. And I see that a lot. And I think a lot of it comes down to, two key points, I think. And the first one is that web designers, I don't think, are as clear as they can be in language that clients understand about what they're going to do. So there needs to be better clarity. And I mean, we get caught up in technical jargon, and it's like it strokes our egos to know all of these technical words or how things work when somebody else doesn't. And it makes you feel good to know stuff that other people don't, but it sucks because clients don't get that and they think it's what they want. But unless you're really, really super, super clear with them, they might change their mind. And then you go over in terms of hours and you don't know what to do about that. Or they think they're getting one thing and they're really getting something else. And things need to be explained better in a language that clients can understand, that's devoid of technical jargon or anything like that. You need to talk to them in their language, which has been a huge thing for me and it's taken me years to figure out. I still haven't figured it out totally, but I've spent a lot of time really focused on the people that I work with that hire web designers, how they communicate. And that's huge. And the other thing is that when you're speccing out a project, you're talking to a client about a project and you're talking about deliverables or what you're going to do, you have to do everything you say that you're going to do every single time or else it's not going to work. If I didn't do that for one client, I would probably have a lot less work, not just that client, but a cascading effect because that client wouldn't recommend me to 10 of their friends. So you have to, I can't remember the name of the guy who he wrote a book, I think it's called The Four Agreements, but he said you have to be impeccable with your word. It has nothing to do with web design. It just has to do with how you live your life. So being impeccable with your word means always doing every single thing that you say you're going to do. So if you're clear with your client at the beginning, saying this is what I'm going to provide, and then you do that, they're going to be happy. It's that easy.
Yeah,
and then as far as the coming up with the way that I work, and the way that I create, and the way that I like the work that I do doesn't look like a lot of other stuff. It kind of looks like my style. It's because I don't care about the web design industry in terms of inspiration. Like I care about learning new things and I care about connecting that sort of things. But I don't look to web design for inspiration for anything that I do. I don't care. I don't want to look at other websites because then my work will be derivative of everything else that exists. So things like National Geographic, fashion magazines, going for walks in nature, taking photos, going to museums, that kind of stuff, super inspiring. And color palettes, nature has the craziest combinations of colors. And my friend is a world famous painter and he is colorblind, but he somehow comes up with these wicked, wicked color combinations that just look, it's like, I don't know how he even thought of that. And essentially he's colorblind too. And he's famous for these crazy color combinations. And he gets his inspiration from the weirdest things. And it's just, I don't know. I think it works because otherwise, if you're inspired by the industry that you create in, the best is going to be is really good derivation of something else. So I like to think outside of what I do to be inspired and then bring it into web design.
Okay.
That was a really long answer.
No, it was a really good answer. It wasn't what I was expecting, but it is great. I want to get back to the communication and what you said about. I want to drill down into that, even though it's a really interesting point you made about color and not looking at other people's work. I think a lot of people take a lot from that. But let's go back to the communication again because I get 100% what you mean about delivering on what you say you're going to do. I mean, that we will all understand that as business people. But I think it's the communication is much more important because what can happen is a web designer can think that the client wants something and deliver it, but the communication hasn't been quite so good enough that mm-hmm. what he thinks the client wants isn't what the client wants. And so you've got a breakdown there. You must, and I think the reason you get it right is probably because you spend more time talking to them and understanding their message and exactly what they want. Do you think that's it, or is it just communication, or do you look into their field and their work more?
A bit too, but I mean, yeah, like I mean, the one thing is that I don't really even talk to web designers. Like I talk a lot to, and I mean, that's why I wrote the book, kind of about web design, but not for web designers, for people hiring web designers, because I spend so much time trying to figure out the communication and how people communicate when they're hiring a web designer. And it's interesting, and I should probably write a book for web designers for how to communicate with people that aren't web designers, because I think that's so important, because now I've written the one side, I work on the other side. Yeah. But the... I think the thing is figuring out how they communicate before you start doing work. And then the other thing is that the more you talk to them throughout the process, the closer, if there is a deviation from the course, you can kind of get it back if you're going in small steps with them to kind of like bring it back. Whereas if you do like 4 mock-ups and start programming it and you're all the way down here and then you show them and they're like, oh no, I kind of want this. Mm. It's like, oh damn, I just did 40 hours of work. Mm. Whereas if you work with them and like, I mean, a lot of times I do the whole kit and caboodle. So like all the figuring out typography, colors, brand design and stuff. So if we go in really small steps and start out even with like, right now I've been doing this a lot and it's pretty interesting, is instead of asking clients for examples of websites that they like, I just get them to create a Pinterest mood board, basically. I mean, the majority of my clients are women, and women use Pinterest more than men at the moment, which I think men should be using Pinterest more, just to kind of like, it's a good way to visually think and analytically think, even though it seems on the surface that's not the case. But if you get a client to create a mood board of photography or posters or typography that they like, they're not even thinking about web design. They're thinking, because if they start thinking about web design, they get in their mind like, oh, well, this person in my industry that's more successful than I am does their website this way. I need to do my website this way. And that sucks to be in that situation when you're a web designer and they're saying, can you just do a site like this? And it's boring, and it sucks the creativity out of you, and you know that it's not right. But so if you get them to think about, just like the way that I think about inspiration, not through web design, like going in nature, looking at like other magazines and that sort of thing. But if you get your clients to think about creativity outside of web design, you kind of get to the core of what they like. And you start, if you get them to like pin photos, you start to get an idea. They might say they like blue, but all the photos they're pinning are pink and green. So there's probably something there. So getting them to think about it outside of any context that they think they want is so important. And it works really, really well. And I mean, that's just one example.
That's such a good idea. I'm sitting here, I'm thinking, you know, I always ask them for other websites. And I can see how that's gone wrong, because some people, sometimes they say their favorite color is blue and it's not, or it might be their favorite color, but it's not what they want. And that Pinterest mood board, or just mood board, is such a cool idea. I can see how that...
Agencies have been doing that for probably 60, 70 years. Like agencies have been like, back like the Mad Men day. Yeah. There was, and it's gone away. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting to do it in that way.
That's right. Well, look, Paul, we've got to get onto the book now, because we've come so close to it and what we're talking about. So, sure. Obviously I wanted you to talk about it anyway. I was going to say leave it to the end, but let's do it now, because I've bought your book and I really loved it. It's called, I'll get you to talk about it in a minute. It's called Be Awesome Online Business. And it's just, I've got to say, I was reading it and I was thinking, I just wanted to give it to all my clients in the last 5 years before they ring me up. Oh, no, I wanted to give it to everyone before they contacted me. That's what I wanted.
That's exactly why I wrote it.
Yeah.
But
it would, you know, it's funny because what we were talking about earlier, you need to write a book for web designers to communicate with people who need websites. But this is a book for people who need websites before they communicate with web designers. But it is absolutely brilliant because what you can do, it's a lot of questions in it, and it's a lot of questions to ask the client. And I think, you know, the listeners will be so interested in these questions. So, you know, 10 questions to consider before starting your online business. I mean, you know, that is just, so many people who get in touch with me, you know, won't be able to answer one, you know, maybe one or two of them, you know. So, you know, I thought it was so useful, and people could copy and paste some of these questions to their clients, and that would stop a whole heap of pain before starting some projects. How would you talk about your book? And do you think I was closer about my description of it there?
Yeah, you definitely were, and that was pretty accurate. And that's I'm happy that it was pretty accurate because that means the points that I was trying to get across actually did come across. So the book was basically written because as a web designer, I was encountering the same kinds of questions and difficulties and things during every project. I've been doing this for 15 years, and I was encountering the same things every project. So I was like, there's got to be something like this out there because I just want to give my clients something to read so that they understand what I do better. And there wasn't anything. So I was like, oh shit, I got to write it. So then I went back further and started thinking more and talking to my clients more about the issues and the hurdles and the wins that they have with working with web designers to build their business. Because basically the website is secondary to they run a business that they want to promote or sell something or do something on the web with. The website isn't their business. Their business is their business, and the website is one aspect of it, even if their business only exists on the internet. So the book really focuses on the fact that, and I mean, this even comes back to the last question that you asked, a good way to get the client to stay kind of on track and keep everybody on the same page is to figure out what the goals are in the beginning, what the business goals are, and then as you're doing the design and the development and everything else, how does every single thing that you do relate to that goal? So then if the client comes to you and is like, well, I don't want this, I want this. And you can say, well, look, this is where we're going after this goal that you have for your business. And this is a solution that I'm proposing. Why is this solution better? If you changed your mind about something, how does this relate to your goal? And a lot of times it's like, oh, no, actually, that's just what I want instead of what the audience wants and that sort of thing. So a lot of the book and the running theme through the book is getting the client to focus on what their business goals are and then how that translates into a website. And it goes through a lot of things like how to find the right web designer. And I mean, web designers, if they read that, then they can kind of know what questions that they might get asked, or they can know what things they need to talk about with the client before they take on the project or not. So it's good to kind of get, like I said, if everybody's kind of on the same page and everybody understands implicitly what's going to happen through the project, then there's going to be less headache and less deviation from that course. If you plan the course from the beginning and it's sound, then it should be a pretty nice project. Like, obviously sometimes there's hiccups, but for the most part, most of the projects that I work on go really well because we focused on what the goals are. And then every single time there's an issue is, does this relate to the goal, or is this the best way to get this goal accomplished? So the book really focuses on that and figuring out what the goals are and then working with like web designers and copywriters and all that sort of stuff to get a finished product built and launched.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it goes back as well to what we were talking about earlier about understanding the client's language and the way you say that the business isn't the website, and that it's because you're trying to find some sort of certain essence, I guess, of what it is the company is about and what they want to communicate to their customers. And it's not a website; it's more of an idea or a problem solving or whatever. But yeah. it is. out there, and it needs to get be crystallized down on paper in order to get to have the sort of clarity of purpose in order to create the website. And the book talks about that, but it's, you know, it also talks about it's not, you know, it does go into absolutely everything like selling products and the list and all the things that I struggle with as well. So it's not just about that central question is extremely important, but there is a lot else in there.
Yeah, and I mean, a lot of clients ask me just because I do all right with social media, and I do sell products. Like I have a few books, and I sell WordPress themes. So I mean, I'm lucky that I'm not just the web design, but I do similar things to what, like I self-publish the books that I write, and a lot of my clients self-publish books or have e-courses or that sort of thing. So I do kind of the same things that a lot of my clients do. So I know how to talk to that, and I know how to work with that because I do that myself anyways. So, I mean, and I touch on that in the book. That's why I wrote a chapter about online publishing, because all my clients ask about that, because the market that I work on is really focused on that. And about selling products and about mailing lists and that sort of thing. Like I really, my mailing list is probably my favorite thing. If I could pick between my website and my mailing list, I'd much rather have my mailing list.
All right.
This is the best way that I found to communicate with people. For one of my books, I don't even have a blog, or the website is a one-page website, but I have a mailing list that's all I need. So, I mean, there's a lot of things, and it's things that I've learned, and I'm lucky too that I've worked with clients that are the top of their industry, that really get it, and that I've learned a ton from.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good that I've kind of had that experience, and then that's kind of what I put into the book as well.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree with all that, because I've had a similar experience as well. In that I started marketing myself on my website through a blog, and it just mushroomed into social media and products and mailing list as well, and all that experience in marketing myself it's the number one thing that you get asked to do when people ask you to build websites. You know, they want to know about how to do all these other things, how to engage the audience out there. So I think for any web designer, it's quite important to do that for yourself, because it just teaches you great lessons and how to do it for other people, as well as all the other benefits of doing it.
Yeah, and I mean, in that regard, you both want the same things. Like, as a web designer, you want to get your name out there. You want to have a successful website that people go to and read and look at. And your clients want to have a successful website that people go to and read and look at. And so you both have the exact same goals. So focusing on that for yourself isn't a bad idea, because then when it comes to, like, I can talk about marketing books to my clients because I've sold thousands of copies of books. So, and I mean, but you don't, like, it doesn't have to be that. You could just have a website that you've successfully promoted and that gives you enough business to survive. And you now have that knowledge for how to build that marketing plan for that website that you can share with clients. And I mean, it doesn't have to be like, this is exactly how you do it to do well, but you can say, in my experience, I found that me doing this has led to this. And that's pretty much what I do. Like, I don't really do any consulting anymore for clients unless it's part of the project. But part of the project is talking about what I know to work and what I know to not work. And that really helps. And I mean, establishing yourself as an expert in what you do, especially even if it's just web design, if you're selling web design, then you're an expert in web design. And you really need to be clear with the client that they're hiring you because they trust that you know what you're doing. They know their audience, they know their business, and they know their product, but you know web design and you know how to build websites and design websites. So you need to rely, and I mean, the book touches on that too, and I really try to bring the point home about that, how if you're hiring somebody to do a professional service, trust that they know what they're doing and trust that you know your business and your audience. And then when those two things come together, it makes an amazing website. So you really need to make sure that they, and it sucks to work with a person that's constantly like, oh, move this 2 pixels down or change this blue to one shade. Like, we've all been there and it sucks. But the more that you establish yourself as an expert in knowing what you do, because you have a portfolio and you have work and you've been doing web design longer than they've been hiring web designers, then if you make it clear to the client that that's what you know, and what they know is what they know, and that's valid, and then it comes together to make something, then there's less of that, like, 50 iterations on a color blue, or like 6,000 ways to put a button here, 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 here. It's just trust that you know, they trust you know what they're doing, and you trust that they know their business and audience, and it makes something amazing, and it makes something where the project is actually fun to work on.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it does help to be considered an expert in your field, and if you are, then you're much less likely to get that niggly pixel over here and shades of blue things that we all hate. I want to change the conversation a little bit and take it away from web design, because I can't believe you don't talk to web designers, because this is exactly what we bitch about all the time. It's bad, but it is a little bit therapeutic on the other hand. But I'd love to talk to you about working from home, because I think that's a lot of people do do that that are listening to this podcast. I certainly have been for a few years, and especially want to talk to you about it, Paul, because you're an interesting guy. There's a lot of different sides. I mean, you have a life outside web design, obviously. You live in a well, I think it's a beautiful island, Vancouver Island. You go surfing because you've got a surfboard stuck in the back of your head there.
It's to remind me of my priorities.
You're a musician. You eat only whole foods, which I'm really interested in. And you do yoga, I believe. Can you tell me something about your lifestyle, in the working at home thing? What helps you, and you know, that sort of thing. Is that a good question? I don't know.
Yeah, that definitely is, and that has a lot of different parts, and I'll try to remember what all the parts are.
So, sorry, it's a lot. There's a lot in there.
That's okay. The first thing is that the reason that I'm a vegan and I eat whole foods, but I mean, like, labels are stupid. So I eat what makes my brain work the best and my body work the best. So I found that eating dairy and meat, and even gluten, I don't eat gluten either. So eating, I've figured out what I eat that makes my brain not function at 100%. Like, if I eat a loaf of bread, or even a couple slices of bread, if I had a loaf of bread, I'd probably be on the floor, like, clutching my stomach. But if I eat bread, I can't think straight. Like, I get a fog on my brain. And so for eating, I eat the way that my brain and body function the best. So I figured out that. And I mean, you can go to a naturopath or a nutrition expert, or you can just do an elimination diet and only eat very selective things, and then reintroduce things and see if your body reacts good or bad. And I really think health is something that entrepreneurs, and especially web designers, really don't focus on. We sit in our chair for 10, 12 hours a day, hunched over, typing on a computer. That's not healthy. That's why I do yoga. I do yoga because my body doesn't move for 10 hours a day. So if I get an hour and a half of moving my spine and moving my body thanks me, and then I can sit there the next day and not have a sore back or sore neck. So same with, like, surfing or hiking or playing music. Doing things off of the computer is what inspires me, makes me focus when I'm sitting at the computer. Like, I do all of these things because when I'm sitting at the computer, then I'm stoked to be there because I've done all the other things that I'd love to do. So when I can get on my computer and I work, I can focus a lot better than if I was just like, okay, I've just got to work, and tomorrow I've just got to work, and the next day, guess what? Work some more. Yeah. It's just like, I wouldn't be productive in that scenario. I would just be daydreaming and sitting at my desk trying to work and looking at social media all day or something.
I think we're touching on a problem that a lot of people have, and it's something I've struggled with, and I try to do various exercise and exercises for my back as well. I try to eat healthy and all the rest of it. But it's and maybe when we're younger, maybe we can do that. We sit in front of the computer and it's great. We're really into it and fantastic. And our bodies are younger, and it does come upon upon us, and the more time we spend, in fact, I think it actually takes years off your life if you do spend your whole days in front of the computer. And
yeah, and you don't notice it when you're younger too. Like, I'm 35 now, but when I was like in my early 20s, I was like sitting at the computer 16 hours a day, and I was like, I'm the best at this. I can work 16 hours in a row, and I'm awesome. And it sucks. And then 10 years later, you realize that like that time has wrecked your back, and you didn't notice it back then.
Yeah,
kind of thing. So health makes you work better, mm-hmm. and health makes you more productive. And the clearer my mind is, the faster I can do my work and then go do other stuff.
Yeah.
So
yeah. So are you very strict about your working time and obviously strict about being focused on the work when you're doing it and not getting distracted by social media? But do you have like a timetable and stuff like that?
No, I work when I work, basically. Like, I've never had an alarm clock, so I wake up, but I mean, like, my body wakes me up at 6 or 7 and I start working, and then if it's nice out, which today is nice out, I'll go for a hike for an hour and then I'll come back and work for a bit. So I don't really have a schedule, but the way that I work is I break it into small chunks of time. And so I'll work for 30 to 45 minutes and I won't have email on. I won't have Twitter or whatever else on. I'll just be in Photoshop or in code or writing code or something like that. And then I'll take a 5-10 minute break. I'll get up, stretch, I'll go get a glass of water, I'll check Twitter, I'll do whatever, and then I'll come back and then I'll work for 30, 40 minutes. And I find it's probably different for everybody, but for me, I can be really, really focused for about 30 minutes and then I start drifting, and then I could be sitting here for 8 hours trying to design a website and I really only have an hour of useful time. But if I break it up into small chunks and then take a break and then come back to it, I can be more focused. And then when I am designing for those 30 or 40 minutes, I'm present and I'm focused on that. I'm not daydreaming about like, okay, where I'm going to go have dinner with my wife or like doing something else. I'm focused on exactly what I'm doing. And then I take a break and then I come back. And I think I think I get a lot done in the day. So for me, that works. For other people, who knows? But I know for me that the small focuses and then break and then like sprints and then take a break and then sprint and then take a break, I can get a lot done in the day. So, that works for me.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think that's a really good idea. And funnily enough, we've been talking for 43 minutes. So you're just about ready for your break. But I've got two more questions to ask you.
Sure. But
first one is something I ask everyone. And the second, and after that, we're going to ask you, you know, obviously where to find you on the web and if anyone's interested in the book, of course. But firstly, a question for any web designer or somebody who wants to start an online business, or maybe someone who's been doing it for a couple of years, maybe freelancing, or maybe they're in a company and they want to start their own business, web designing, that sort of thing. What would be one good bit of advice you could give an aspiring web designer who wants to start their own business and grow their own business online?
To start making things for yourself. Like I learned how to do web design by making websites for myself. I wasn't concerned about clients or pay. I was just concerned about figuring out how to do it. And I mean, like, obviously you can go to school and figure out how to do it. You can't. And Ira Glass has a good quote about this, and I'll paraphrase horribly and destroy the quote, but he has a quote that you can go to school to learn how to do all of these things, but you can't learn taste. So it's interesting that a lot of people that do web design might not, you can't learn taste. So if you have good taste, but you don't know how to get, like if you know what looks good, but you don't know how to get there, you're in the best spot because all you need to do is learn the tools. So the biggest thing for me, and I mean, like not everybody should be a web designer, not everybody should do creative stuff, everybody is creative, everybody's just creative in different ways. So maybe if it's not web design, it's something else. Like I can't like paint pictures to save my life, but I can design, kind of thing. So I think really focusing on figuring out where your taste is and then figuring out how to get to that level, and then seeing if there's people that like I do a very specific style of web design. If somebody wants something that's like tons of stuff all over the page, that's not me. And so, but I'm very clear. Like if you look at my website or you look at the work that I do, it's really clear what I do and what I don't do. And for clients, it makes it really easy. And yeah, you might not work with everybody, but you'll work with people that get what you do, and those projects will be much easier to do. And then you can get more clients in that regard. Like I've turned, even when I was starting out, I did turn down work because it wasn't what I if I'm not going to put in my portfolio, I'm not going to do it. And that served me well. And I mean, it could be thought of as like, oh, well, you have tons of work, so it doesn't matter. But even when I was starting out and I didn't have a ton of work, I still really focused on what I was really wanting to do. And it, because think long game in that, because if you keep doing that kind of work, that's the kind of work that's in your portfolio, and that's the kind of work that you're known for, and that's the kind of clients that you're going to get. So, and it's not just pigeonholing you into doing this one type of site. It comes down to taste. So clients that have a similar aesthetic taste to you will be drawn to you, and they'll see that you have experience doing that kind of thing. And then it kind of benefits everybody.
Well, that's incredibly interesting. If you don't want to see it in your portfolio, then don't do it. That's great. That's fantastic. Fantastic. So, Paul, where can people find you and follow you on Twitter and all sort that sort of thing?
Sure. And on a horribly hard to remember URL.
Yeah.
EJRBS.com or on Twitter, PJRBS. And the book that we were talking about today, Be Awesome in Online Business, is on PJRBS.com/book or from the book link on the website.
Yeah. No, you can.
Or just Google Paul Jarvis. I think it's either myself or a British rugby player, but I'm pretty sure I'm coming up first in Google right now.
Yeah.
So if you just Google Paul Jarvis, I should come up first. Yeah. And I'm not the British rugby player.
No, I should think that would be quite an easy distinction to make. But anyone can go onto your site. I think it is very easy to remember because it's P Jarvis without any of the vowels, and. You know, and it's a great website, and you can learn so much from you. I mean, you know, just your blog posts are brilliant because they got no pictures in, and they're really short. And I just like, yeah. They're just so nice to read without any of this crap, you know. And nobody does it like that. And
But that's the kind of clients that I want to attract. So that's exactly what the aesthetic of my website looks like.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
I'm beginning to see the logic here, but Paul, it's been great, mate. I really appreciate you spending the time talk to us. I hope you have a great day, a great week, and everything.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for coming on, Paul. I don't know what to say apart from
it was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Paul Jarvis there from pjrvs.com. And if you go to pjrvs.com/book, you can download his new book, Be Awesome at Online Business, a handbook for succeeding on the web. Thanks a lot, Paul, for the interview. That was great. And I would advise anyone to go to Paul's website and have a look because there's some great stuff on there. Right, thanks very much for listening. And before I go, thank you everyone who's left a review on iTunes. I would love to see a few more because that really does help get the show out there. So if you go to iTunes and search for the Design Marketing Podcast, it should come up with my friendly logo on it. And then if you click on the show and click on ratings and reviews, you can leave your review there. So thanks very much for listening. This has been Rob from robcoven.com. I hope you enjoyed it. Bye.